From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, will dirty electricity hurt us? Dr. Samuel Millam joins us. We'll talk about that, but here's what's happening. Well, Japan just recently got hit with another major earthquake. Preliminary magnitude 7.3 hitting northern Japan. No tsunami warning has been issued. None. The quake was rated 3 on the Japanese seismic scale of 1 to 7. Fascinating story with President Obama in the Mars Curiosity lander. The president has sent a message to the rover team at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. If you find Martians, let me know. The president aboard Air Force One on Monday let the team know during a phone call with assembled members of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory team, congratulating the crew for successfully landing the rover Curiosity on the Martian surface. Later in the call, the president made clear his desire to know ASAP if the team encounters Martian life, no matter how small. In fact, he says, if you do make contact with Martians, please let me know right away, and then a little chuckle. A story that we've got for you up at coasttocoastam.com, NASA releasing the first full-color mosaic from its Curiosity rover on the surface of Mars. Scientists say it looks just like the southwestern United States. Another story at coasttocoastam.com, the military testing a new radical hypersonic aircraft that can reach 4,500 miles an hour, but they can get there and do that within seconds. It's called a scramjet engine. It can accelerate to over Mach 6, dramatically slashing journey times by traveling at 5 times the speed of sound. You'd be able to go from New York to London in an hour. It's amazing. Venezuela, training a guerrilla army aiming to be 1 million strong by 2013 to fight off what they say, a possible U.S. invasion. The plan, crafted with input from the close ally and fellow U.S. foe Cuba, covers the legal, logistical, and other angles necessary to transform a professional army into a guerrilla army. Jerry Corsi from WorldNet Daily, of course, a noted author with us. Jerry, is this nuts or what?
Well, it is pretty nuts, George. I mean, it comes from a woman, Maria Corina Machado, who is a former presidential candidate in Venezuela. And she's circulating this idea that the militia, and Venezuela has a militia that Chavez has created, is going to go to 2 million by 2019, 1 million by 2013. And the idea is the militia will be there to protect against the U.S. invasion. First of all, the idea that President Obama is going to invade Venezuela is pretty much off the wall right now. Both President Obama and Chavez politically are closer to one another on the left than anyone would like to imagine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, President Obama's locked in a re-election campaign. We're not invading Venezuela anywhere in the near future. I think it's really the kind of a hysterical story that comes out of Venezuela, especially when Chavez, who is plagued with cancer, is himself running for re-election.
It is a strange story. Okay, Jerry, thanks. And what's new with you, by the way?
My book on oil, The Great Oil Conspiracy, will be out on September 1st in hardcover.
Boy, when you're ready to go, book your show with us, okay?
I look forward to it. Thank you, George.
That's Dr. Jerry Corsi. The Treasury Department says in a new report that the government expects to lose more than $25 billion on the $85 billion auto bailout. That's a 15% higher than it's previously been forecasted. In a monthly report sent to Congress, the Obama administration boosted its forecast of expected losses by more than $3.3 billion to almost $25 billion. And General Motors recalling at least 38,000 Chevrolet Impala police vehicles in North America because the lower front control arms could break, creating a possible crash risk. 38,000 police cars. President Obama announcing emergency measures to ease the impact of the worst drought in half a century, but he stopped short of waiving the government's requirement that a large portion of the now shriveled corn crop be diverted to make ethanol. Helen Gurley Brown, the editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan magazine, has died, age of 90, Brown died in New York shortly after being admitted to a hospital. International concert organist Carlo Curley, known as the Pavarotti of the organ, has died, age 59. A message on his website called his death a huge loss for all in the organ community. Very concerned and upset. Curley, well known for appearances on radio and television, dead at the age of 59. Similarities between the DNA of modern people and Neanderthals are more likely to have arisen from shared ancestry than interbreeding, according to a study now. According to the research carried out at the University of Cambridge, previously it had been suggested that shared parts of the genomes of those two populations were the result of interbreeding. Now they're saying maybe not so. Michael Cremo, Forbidden Archaeology, with us. So now where do we go, Michael, with this story?
Well, what they're talking about there is the fact that geneticists have determined that humans like us, modern humans, have about 4% the same genes as they've recovered from fossils of Neanderthals. So the question is, why do we have the same genes as the Neanderthals did? So there are two competing explanations among scientists. One of them is that we share the same genes because we interbred with the Neanderthals in ancient times. And the other idea, which came out in this recent report, is that we share some of the same genes with the Neanderthals because we had a common ancestor. Mm-hmm. And when I look at all the evidence, and this is something I've said in Forbidden Archaeology, when I look at all the evidence, I go along more with the idea that there were separate species that interbred with each other. That's the explanation. The picture isn't one of common ancestry or evolution. It's one of coexistence of different types of hominins, different types of human-like beings. I think many types of human-like beings coexisted with each other in the past, and I don't think it's impossible that some of them interbred with each other.
Very good. Thank you. Michael Cremo's website, by the way, all linked up for you at our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Listen to this quote from many years ago. I care not what puppet is placed on the throne of England to rule the empire. The man that controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire, and I control the money supply. Baron Nathan Rothschild said that. Up next, they own it all, including you. Dr. Robert Rowan joins us on Coast to Coast AM. They own it all, including you, by means of toxic currency. Now, what does that all mean? Dr. Robert Rowan graduated from Johns Hopkins University, earned a medical degree from the University of California at San Francisco as well. He's internationally known for his work in integrative medicine. His latest work deals with the currency we're using in the United States. And here he is on Coast to Coast, Robert Rowan. Doctor, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you, George. Pleasure to be with you.
Looking forward to your co-author, Ronald McDonald, but not that Ronald McDonald.
Not that one, but that's his real name.
That is fantastic. Let me ask you this. How did a doctor who's into all kinds of medicine end up writing an incredible book about currency?
I've watched my colleagues lose their licenses for no reason, my alternative medicine colleagues. My brilliant friend, Ron, has watched in dread as a prison without bars has descended upon the people of this country. And in countless hours of discussion, we were able to narrow it down to one common thread, toxic currency.
Mm. Toxic currency that is permeating itself through America's society. But it's been going on for a long time, hasn't it, Robert?
It has. Remember, when the nation was founded, our rights came from God. It didn't come from the Constitution of the United States. In fact, we were the sovereigns. Our rights came from the common law of the land, going back from time immemorial. We were the ones who created the states, which states then created the corporate entity called the United States. Now, in the twinkling of an eye, it would be just like you're the master of your house and you have a butler, and you go away for the weekend, and something that your butler created, the butler is akin to the states, when you come back, owns you and the butler.
Yeah. Just takes right over.
And how did this happen? I mean, in 100 years, just 100 years, we've gone from a relatively free people to regulated from cradle to grave.
Why do so many people think they're free when they're really not?
There is a quote in the book, and I believe it comes from Rockefeller. The best slave is one who thinks he is free.
So true. So true indeed. And this is happening worldwide. It's not just here, even though most of your work is based on the United States. This is a worldwide problem.
It is, because all over the world, except perhaps in Jersey and Guernsey, currency is created out of thin air as debt owed from the government to a central bank. And therefore, you are not using your property. We call it currency of theft. Shall I elaborate?
Yes, please.
Okay. When our birthright's the common law of England, there were four essential threads that we presented. We have the right to do anything we want to do in the common law as long as we don't tread on the rights of someone else.
All right.
Number two, the government can't take anything from us absent trial by jury according to the law of the land. That's the Magna Carta. Payment must be in specie. That's gold or silver. That represented portable land. It's been said that all rights arise out of ownership of property, because you can't even contract, George, if you don't have something that's sovereignly yours to offer. And four, to be insolvent was a crime. It was the crime of theft. You didn't pay back what you borrowed. Now, the people on the land were subject to the common law of the land. Merchants on the sea were subject to a different law, international law, called admiralty. In admiralty, you could be punished for just an action. In common law, to be punished, you needed an action and an injury. Common law used specie for instant extinguishment of debt. Admiralty law allowed commercial bills of exchange. And that's important.
In the old days, they used to call it debtor's prison.
Yeah.
And so I assume that people who could not pay their bills, they got tossed into jail, didn't they?
Right. And what Ron calls it today is a prison we have without bars. We're in a debtor's prison now, which is not a prison with bars. It's a prison of regulations.
They've got us just where they want us.
Well, there's only two places in the Constitution that permits the central government to regulate you or me or anyone else. The word regulate appears two places. One, the power to regulate commerce among the states. And that, at the time of the Constitution, meant movement of goods across fictional lines. So if you were a merchant, yes, you were in commerce subject to admiralty international law. But there's another place that most people don't think about, and that's Article 4, where the Congress is given the power to issue all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property of the United States. Hello? Now we can start connecting some dots as we proceed on this, George.
And who makes all the money, Robert? Somebody at the top is getting very wealthy.
Well, we tried to figure this out. There's a Ninth Circuit case. I'm in California, as are you.
Okay.
The Ninth Circuit case called Lewis, the Federal Reserve was sued as an agency of the government for a workman's comp injury. Turns out that the Federal Reserve was found not to be an agency of the United States, but its own corporation, and therefore the man didn't have standing to sue the Federal Reserve Bank. It's a privately owned corporation. Now, true, its administrators may be appointed by the president, but I'm a physician. Suppose I established a clinic and I had a deal with the president to appoint the board of directors. That doesn't mean that I don't own it.
That's right.
So we have now, and I searched the website of the Secretary of State of every state, including California, where there's a Fed branch, and Texas and New York and others.
There's one in St. Louis.
Right. And you can't find articles of incorporation at any site. So it can't be a domestic corporation. It has to be an international corporation.
Aha.
And consider this. You are using their product. Modern Money Mechanics, they admit, in the Federal Reserve's own publication, that their currency is their product. Well, you're using commercial instruments. And at Title 12, Section 411 of the U.S. Code, you'll find the definition of Federal Reserve notes. They are obligations of the United States, obligations in parenthesis, debts of the United States. Now, debt to whom? Well, the maker, whose name is at the top. So we're using debt, we're compelled to use debt of the United States, leaned to the Federal Reserve Bank in all of our transactions.
And aren't they making money, Robert?
Are they,
without
really making money?
without even having money, they're making money.
Exactly. That's more like it. And by the way, to all the Federal Reserve naysayers, yes, there really is a reserve. The reserve is all the trees they can cut down to print currency.
That's right.
Debt currency.
And they make more and more and more.
But the impact of these notes is horrific. I know we're going to be coming up on a break soon, but remember, these notes now are debts of the United States, so the corporate government is responsible for this property. Now they can fall under Article 4 of the Constitution as territory or other properties of the United States, and they can be regulated to death.
Mm, and they are.
Yes.
And they are.
We don't have gold in circulation anymore.
Who pulled off the scam?
Roosevelt.
Did he know what he was doing?
I believe so. See, we were still a relatively free country until 1933. The undoing, we were not subject to the Constitution. I know that comes as a surprise, but there's two cases, Paddleford versus Savannah and Barron versus Baltimore, that says we weren't party to the Constitution, hence we couldn't be subject to it. Two things happened. The 14th Amendment, which was passed by fraud, by martial law imposed on the South, created a second class of citizens called citizens of the United States, of a corporation, and they were not given sovereign God-given rights and immunities. God-given rights, they were given privileges and immunities, if you read Article 1 of the 14th Amendment. And they couldn't question the debt of the United States. That's Article 4 of the 14th Amendment. So the question then is, how did they get the rest of us into this? And that's where we fast forward to 1913 with the passage of the Federal Reserve Act.
Mm-hmm.
And these debt notes, and then to 1933, when Roosevelt stole at gunpoint the wealth of the United States and compelled us all into debtor status by using these debt notes. And as debtors, we don't have rights. We only have privileges.
Did somebody convince him to do this?
I don't know. We only put in the book what we could absolutely prove.
I mean, I don't think he could have conceived it himself.
No, I don't think he did. I think that this was a plan perpetrated by the bankers going back many, many generations.
Robert, when we come back, I want to ask you about, you know, a man or a woman, they go to work, they come back, they get their paycheck, it goes into their bank account, and they buy whatever they buy, and so be it. And it has the illusion that everybody's making money and it's working, those who are working, of course. I want to get your take on that. We'll also take a few calls. Our special guest this hour, Dr. Robert Rowan, we're talking about his book along with Ronald McDonald, not that one, They Own It All, Including You, as we talk about currency, money, something you should learn about. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Pacific time, will be our very first video audio chat for Coast Insiders, members of the club. So sign up and have some fun. We're going to come back in just a moment with Dr. Robert Rowan as we continue talking about their work, They Own It All, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Dr. Robert Rowan, his book, They Own It All. Robert, a family, a man, a woman, they go out, they have a job, they make some money, they put it in their bank account, they spend it, they have credit cards. They have the perception that everything's okay, assuming they're working and they're making some money. and they're paying their bills. Is it just a facade?
It's an illusion. My co-author, he's brilliant. He found a case, and he woke me up at 5:30 in the morning, which is a bad time for me, and used the term liens by mere maritime hypothecation. And
well, what does that mean?
Yeah, I jumped out of bed and hit the ceiling. I knew what it meant, but I never heard it in this context. He found a case, one Ford station wagon and so much in currency, where the government seized it on the land in Admiralty. Now, remember, this is on the land. This is not on the high sea. How do you seize something in Admiralty on the land? The court left a trail, which he was able to trace back into the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and found that the government was able to do that because there were liens of mere maritime hypothecation on the goods. That means that that Ford station wagon was never paid for.
Right. It was, let's say a bank lent him the money for it.
Oh, no. Let's say he paid cash for it.
All right.
He didn't pay for it. George, here's an example.
What do you mean?
Let's say I lend you my hoe, and you now need a rake.
All right.
So I own that hoe, correct?
Okay.
You exchange my hoe for the rake.
Okay.
My hoe is gone. I have a claim on your rake because you acquired it with my property.
Okay.
Lien by mere maritime hypothecation means goods that were not paid for, so they're hypothecated. There's a lien on them. Everything that we acquire using the property of the United States, these notes, which are liened to the Federal Reserve Bank, everything we acquire is tainted by what we call in the book the slime of the currency.
So what you're saying, in theory, let's assume somebody pays off their house.
They don't own it.
In theory, they don't own it then. You're saying it's still a lien because the government hasn't paid off its notes.
I'll give you some proof. There are some cases where they find drugs on the premises of a house, and the homeowner doesn't even know it's there. He didn't do it.
Right, okay.
They seized the house and all of his bank accounts. How could they do it if he had sovereign title rights and interest in that property? When you had gold and you purchased something with gold in the common law, you acquired title rights and interest in addition to the absolute right of possession. Now that we're using their property, we get the privilege of possession, but we do not get the title rights and interest.
Is it like we're borrowing their collateral?
Yeah, perhaps. We're borrowing or we're compelled to use their collateral, and we've all become debtors and by this process, and as debtors, we're literally chattel. This is how they rope the rest of us into the federal jurisdiction.
Yeah, but in theory, you know, if that person pays off their house, in theory,
what did they pay it off with?
Is any, well, you know, with this so-called, you know, lent money.
Right.
But who's going to go after their paid-off house?
Well,
if the government, let's say the United States defaults on its obligations, will somebody go and get that house?
I can't answer that question, but let's look at the inheritance tax for a moment as an example. George, you labor all your life. You stuff your bank account with $10 million.
I wish.
That you pay taxes for. Okay, so you've paid taxes on that $10 million. Theoretically, you think that's yours, correct?
Right.
Because you've paid the tax.
Right.
George, for the privilege of transferring their property to another person, like your son or your daughter, there's a tax on the transfer.
There's a tax on the transfer, which is even higher than probably the tax I originally paid.
Exactly. Now tell me that that property was yours.
Yeah. Obviously it wasn't, was it?
No. The whole system is based on a fraud. And we've taken this to another step. At the founding, our courts were called Courts of the United States. And the Coinage Act of 1792 mandated that the courts recognize only gold and silver coined money as the money of the accounts of the United States. So, George, if you walk into a court and the money of the accounts is the yen, whose court is it?
Well, I don't know. It's not ours.
It's Japanese.
That's right.
And if it's the ruble, whose court is it?
It's the Russians. Russian.
And if it was gold coin of the United States, it would be a court of the United States. Now, suppose you walk into a court and the money it accounts is the Federal Reserve note. Whose court is it?
The Feds.
Thank you.
And not the federal government. These
exactly.
Private. Now, why can't we find out exactly who these private banks are? We don't know who they are.
G. Edward Griffin did a phenomenal job in his Creature from Jekyll Island.
He sure did.
But we sure really don't know the ultimate behind this. What Ron and I tried to do in the book was to show the ramifications of the compelled use of these commercial instruments. The compelled use lifted us off of the land where we had sovereign rights that came from our Creator and put us on the sea in international commerce where we were under admiralty law. And incidentally, you know that at the time that Roosevelt seized the gold, he committed treason. He seized gold without due process. Within 2 years, all this administrative law came to pass.
What kind of gold did they seize in those days, by the way? Everything?
Well,
rings? Jewelry?
Coin money. Coin money that I actually owned. Well, I'm speaking figuratively now.
I know.
For example, George, I sent you a picture of a $20 gold certificate. Did you see that?
I did.
It says on there, this is to certify that there is on deposit in the Treasury of the United States $20 in gold coin payable to the bearer on demand. Well, let's say I had that certificate in my hand. Whose gold is that?
It should be yours.
Exactly. And if they don't give it back to me, what just happened?
They've stole it, or they defaulted.
No, they stole it. It's theft.
Well, that's...
It's that simple.
Isn't that happening now?
Yes. And now the ramifications are there's all this toxic currency sitting out there, which we don't own. We have the privilege of using, and they're printing it out of thin air. So even if you have $1 million in your bank account, George, as they print more... Let's say they double the money supply. Now your $1 million is only worth $500,000. And modern money mechanics tells us what the value of the Federal Reserve note is.
Is this a Ponzi scheme?
Yes, yeah, the biggest Ponzi scheme the world has ever known.
Well, we saw what happened to Bernie Madoff.
Bernie Madoff was a kindergartner compared to this. Madoff was probably 0.01%.
But he only got caught, though, Robert, when something went wrong. And people started asking for their money when the crunch hit.
Yes.
So in this particular case, this Ponzi scheme that is being perpetrated on us, when does that fall apart?
As the economy is in its current state of collapse, people are beginning to question this whole scheme. Consider that since 1971, when Nixon abrogated the Bretton Woods Agreement and wouldn't honor Federal Reserve notes for gold, all of the Federal Reserve notes that were printed since then have been printed out of thin air.
Nothing backing it.
Exactly.
Fiat money.
So all the wealth that was created has been created out of thin air. The stock market at that time was 1,000. It's now 13,000. And now look at the price of gold compared to the same thing. They're running parallel. The wealth was created out of thin air since 1971, and unless they simply print more, it's evaporating back into the ethers from whence it came, hence the economic collapse.
Let's take a few calls. Robert, let's go to Ben in Litchfield, Connecticut, east of the Rockies. Hi, Ben. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah. To try and make it short, I was curious because it seems like you're almost leading into it, is if you've done any work into if income tax is actually mandatory for us to pay. I don't know if you've heard or done any research in that as to how they kind of snuck it in. I think it was a Christmas vacation or something like that.
Well, and apparently all the states necessary to ratify did not do that. But unfortunately, if you don't, they haul you off, Robert. So what do you do?
Well, there's a couple of things. In the book, you might be interested in Appendix H, where the Franchise Tax Board of California literally returned a lawful gold coin, money of accounts of the state of California, to a taxpayer alleging it was an invalid financial document. Did you see that?
No, I missed that one.
Okay. The franchise, a man sends a payment in for alleged taxes in gold, and they send it back.
They won't take it.
So what happened? Then what is the state of California if it can't recognize its own money of accounts? But let's go back to the issue of taxes, which I really don't want to address. I really would like Ron on the phone with us as well if that subject comes up. But remember this, if you're using those notes, you are in international commerce. You're using commercial notes. That places you subject to the rules and regulations of the government.
Aren't they doing this around the planet?
Indeed.
In every country?
Indeed.
What a great scheme. How did they get it on this and we didn't?
You hit the quote. George, you read it at the beginning of the show. I care not what puppet is placed on the throne of England. It doesn't matter who wins the next election, whether it's Obama or Romney. They're puppets.
Amazing. West of the Rockies, Jack in San Diego. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I have a comment and then a question.
Sure thing, Jack.
1913 was a very bad year for our individual sovereignty because it not only gave us the Federal Reserve Act, but it gave us the 16th Amendment that allowed for a tax on income and later became a tax on wages. My question is this. We don't really chop down trees to print money anymore because almost all money today is electronic. And the public isn't aware of this, but banks today keep very little paper currency on hand. So I have two questions. Paper currency says this is legal tender for all debts, public and private. So question number one, is electronic currency legal tender? And question number two.
Interesting.
Are you legally entitled to transfer your electronic currency into paper currency? And here's why I ask that question. Is because I have a large CD, and I actually have CDs in several banks. And I'm at the point now where I don't want to let them use my money for no interest. And so I called the manager at each of these banks, and I gave them 7 days' notice that I wanted to close out my CDs and I want the money in cash. Every one of them refused. They used the term threshold. They say under the Patriot Act, any withdrawal over $10,000 were required to report it to the Treasury Department and the IRS. And I says, fine, report it. I've got all my money legally.
Right.
I want it in paper currency. And they said, we just, for security reasons, we don't do that.
Well, remember,
what you can get is $10,000.
Who owns it, number one? They've written the rules and regulations so you know that if you're handling more than $10,000 of their property or 10,000 pieces of paper, you're absolutely subject to everything. Electronic currency is technically backed by paper currency, which uses the word legal tender. Now, let's look at the term legal tender. There is a monstrous difference between that term and the term used in the Coinage Act of 1792. That act said that the gold and silver coin money shall be a lawful tender. We're now using legal tender. It's very different. Legal tender doesn't pay for anything. The word legal tender means form of offer. Lawful tender, the word lawful means common law, payment and extinguishment.
Now, Robert, let me ask you this. Assuming this doesn't change and it just keeps going the same way, what do you suggest people do?
Well, first of all, transact in specie if you can, number one. Number two, if you serve on a jury, please don't convict anybody of a crime other than a common law crime, meaning murder, rape, theft, that type of thing. Please don't convict anybody of an administrative crime because it's all fraud. Number three, demand of your elected officials, especially at the state level, that they do their duty. And it keep the Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10 of the Constitution, which says no state shall make anything but gold or legal coin the legal tender in the payment of debt. This has to be done at the state level, and several states are trying to return to specie. If we don't do this, we're going to be literally smothered by it because you can see the collapse unfolding all around us.
Well, that's true. You know, already, we had a story last week where the five major banks have been told by government to get ready for a collapse, make a plan, and we're not going to be able to save you this time. That's scary.
And your advertisers, George, your gold advertisers, they're saying this. I hear your voice on the air. Everybody is saying it's coming. It's coming. Man, when the hurricane is coming, the winds start picking up. Our economy is in a state of collapse because of this fraudulent currency, wealth created out of thin air. We can bring it back. And I hope you'll have Ron on sometime, because his idea is to get the states to get off of this Federal Reserve note, debt note, which bears interest. Remember, they create these pieces of paper out of thin air.
Right.
They then loan it at interest. They just print it out of thin air.
What a deal. What a deal. I mean, it's like selling someone a car you don't even have.
That's right.
Pay me for the car. Sure. So they give you whatever, and you can't give them a car.
If the states could start circulating their own credit notes.
Individually?
Each state, yes. And fix an exchange rate and agree not to print. You know, in the Coinage Act of 1792, it was a capital offense to mess with the weight of a coin that the mint minted.
Right. You mean you couldn't shave off a piece of silver, for
example?
You'd
be put to death.
You'd be put to death?
Yes. It was a capital offense.
Wow.
That's how much the founders knew of the horror of manipulated money. In fact, Benjamin Franklin said that the real reason for the Revolutionary War was that the king was trying to impose currency from the Bank of England on the colonies.
Well, you know what? I think he tried.
Well,
he may have succeeded.
We've got it today.
He may have succeeded indeed. Robert, thank you so much. Name of the book, They Own It All, Including You. Robert, where can you get the book?
They can go to Amazon and get it.
All right. They've got that all. Great. In a moment, we're going to be talking about dirty electricity, how it could affect you. This is an unbelievable story about phones and the dangers of smart meters and so many other things. We'll be back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Samuel Milam on Coast to Coast AM.